Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. My name is Todd. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan.
How's it going? How's it going, guys? Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I have some warm goodness in my stomach.
Oh, yes.
Because
I think I know
today,
what you're talking about.
Because today, very cryptic, we had Jared Turner, our good buddy from Cineswirl.
So good.
Yeah, it's basically, he's got a brick and mortar shop. It's and he does the most amazing cinnamon buns, and that's really just his focus, and that's what they do. Yeah. And his story is so awesome, because, you know, here's a guy who was married with a couple of kids, did an MBA, which is crazy already, then has a couple of amazing job offers, says, nah, I'm kind of interested in China. I'm just going to go to China. Liquidates his life, comes to China. Works for some, you know, some investors
and
investor guys, and has these things, and they're like, oh, we have some entrepreneurial ideas. We're just going to give you the resources, and you be the guy who just like tries to execute them, and some other things, right? He did other stuff here with the how he learned how to speak Chinese and things, and then of course has this shot, and he's had two more kids as well.
Yeah,
now he has four.
Yeah, he has four kids, and he's done this all while starting with his amazing wife, Heather, starting Cineswirl, which started from a blog post on an expat website.
A love for something that was online.
Yeah, it was a love for something. And
the recipe.
He personally, on his own scooter, delivered the first Cinnabuns all over the city and started from the total ground up, from idea conception, and built this.
Yeah, but the market wanted it. He let the market
decide.
You know, decide and drive him to some. Just like, we cannot simply have jobs and fulfill all these orders out of our own house and our own kitchen. We have to do this, and we might as well just do it full steam because there's so much demand for it.
Yeah.
And I mean, those cinnamon buns have helped him get out of, you know, fines from his space.
Oh, yeah. And the cinnamon buns are
the tax guys, and then he's suddenly getting calls from the police stations locally to have them delivered down there.
But he's got a great attitude, and I really implore everyone to listen and just kind of study his attitude.
Yeah, if you want to know how to kind of be successful or be happy.
Yeah, be happy.
Not just even be successful, but to be happy in China with everything that's going to go on and how you have to deal with all the differences of how it is to do a business in China and the kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing you just said, Ryan. Great thing. Take away his attitude and the way he talks and his perspective on being in China and trying to work with Chinese and how to kind of accept and learn how to play the game and talk a lot about face and stuff. So that's really what, you know, we do some great talking, but take that away from it. Yeah.
So let's get into that away.
Okay, good.
Hey guys, we're here with Jared Turner, and I am going to give a little bit of a bio history again, as always, and how he came to China and his journey. So he went to Utah University and was an econ major in the beginning. And then he went to Purdue to finish his MBA in 2009. And if you guys remember, that was the, you know, all the shit was happening, recession. It was really hard to find a job market. And instead of staying, decided to move to China with no Chinese at all and go there and found a job working and doing marketing research or market research, actually, in 2011, like an entrepreneur in residence for a bunch of wealthy Chinese investors, which is really, really interesting. And then actually in 2012, he started a publishing company, which published Graded Readers, which is like a strategy for learning Chinese. And then at the same time, he started what is known really well here in Shanghai and all over China as Cineswirl. And this is a great origin story from their kitchen, from their blog, all the way to the hearts of everybody in Shanghai, from Heather, his wife. Amazing, amazing Cinnabuns that they make. And he's growing this rapidly as a brick and mortar store all over. So it's really great to have you on the show, Jared. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks so much, Ryan.
What is the secret behind your Cinnabuns? Because they are addictive and delicious.
Well, I always tell people there's a million things you can do wrong with a cinnamon roll. And so I wouldn't say it's one secret. It's about doing a lot of little things right.
Yeah, I feel like that's basically what you could explain a lot of startups. avoiding errors and doing a lot of little things right.
Don't die.
Yeah.
Why do you call it a cinnamon roll, not a cinnamon bun?
Some people call it a cinnamon roll. Some call it a cinnamon bun. I think cinnamon bun mostly comes from Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah, actually.
guilty as
charged. But in New Zealand and Australia, they call them cinnamon scrolls,
What?
Yeah. Scrolls.
Cinnamon scrolls.
That sounds very wise.
But there's also a sticky bun, which is a little bit different. It's a little different, but it's a same ingredients, but just different how you make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all good. They're
okay,
all good.
So why did you come to China? That just sounds ridiculous.
When I talk about the story now, I look back, it does sound pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, and you came out around the same time I did. I arrived, well, it was my second tour, but the very end of 2008, which, as I can attest, was a horrible, shitty time to be looking for a job.
It was a rough time. I was coming up on graduation there at Purdue. And I was fortunate enough to have a couple job offers. But both the job offers, they just didn't have any path to Asia. And I guess backstory a little bit is that I was really interested in coming here to Asia. Okay. I did a study abroad at Tsinghua University in Beijing. I had a lot of good Chinese friends. I'd done some projects before with some companies, funny enough, exporting to China. And I don't know, it just kind of caught my attention. So it was just kind of a crazy idea, but my wife and we talked about it. And
You were married by then?
Yeah, we had married two kids, and we kind of decided it was like now or never, because the older they get, the harder it is.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we just said, let's just do it. So I remember calling up those companies, and it sounded the craziest thing I ever did. I called them, I said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm actually going to be going to China and be looking for a job there. And they're kind of like, what? We just sold off everything we had, liquidated our assets, if you will, and up and
kept
moved
the
to
kids,
China.
Right?
For some time, yeah, yes, we
okay,
did.
Okay, hold
did.
On
we
to those.
Close. Yeah, yeah. yeah. But we just moved to China when what we had in suitcases.
Market was terrible for kids back then, so just rather wait. That's very ballsy.
Yeah,
that's very ballsy.
I guess so. Looking back, I think sometimes you just make some big decisions in your life and you just go for it. And like I said, it felt like it was kind of a now or never, and I look at sometimes the branches in my life and the decisions I've made. And, I can look at, sometimes classmates, it's kind of sometimes a good benchmark, seeing how they've, taken some of the jobs they were offered and they have great lives. And, they've had a nice
boring as
job.
Shit, but great lives.
yeah. well, maybe, I mean, they're doing some of the most exciting things, but I kind of look at our life as just, it's very different. And I've poised ourselves for opportunities and experiences, which, there's no way I would have any otherwise.
How did you get connected with the Chinese investors when you were kind of like a entrepreneur in residence for a fund that wanted you to start up stuff?
Well, funny enough, at that time, my Chinese really wasn't that great. it was more of a mid upper elementary level. So it really wasn't that fantastic, but it was a friend of a friend and the investor's daughter. I had got to know her through some, similar organizations we were involved with. And so it's this long courting process, that a lot of times when some Chinese business people or they're looking for someone, they usually don't just see they're like have some sort of job description and then just say, fill this position. No, they kind of have some sort of idea and thought about what they want, and they maybe have someone that they're interested in, and they'll kind of slowly get to know you. So it was over, come out to this event, come here, join us for dinner. And so it just was kind of over process of time. It was kind of the slow courting, if you will. And then she's like, hey, we really want you to come work for us. Mm-hmm. We want you to come help us do this. And she talked to me about it after gotten to know me for a few months. Then it was a couple months of that saying, hey, we'd like you to come work for us.
And doing those startups, did they give you, that was 2011,
that's
right?
That's right.
I'm just curious because there's working with Chinese investors for the first time can be difficult, like expectation wise, or how'd that happen?
One thing that I have learned important lessons about is face. And we talk a lot about that in, about Chinese culture, but it's very important about making sure that your boss gets face. And even if you have like negative feelings or you have frustrations about how some of the things are done, you need to. I think I also learned to take a step back and appreciate though how those people got to at least where they are, And despite maybe the deficiencies or the maybe lack of sophistication, as I might think in some areas, appreciating that they've functioned very well and been successful in what they're doing, despite all maybe these shortcomings. Mm-hmm. And also that appreciating sometimes the opportunity and the chance that they do give you. Sometimes if things don't really pan out as a way you hope or you expect. And I talk about that relates to faith, because if you can do those things, you can kind of understand and still appreciate things, it's easier to help them maintain faith. Mm-hmm. Because if you turn negative in an environment like that, you're not going to help them keep faith. Because otherwise you end up kind of complaining and you start telling them things.
To explain face, I mean, if we were to, for our listeners, you don't want to dishonor or do anything that might seem negative or rude towards that person, right? Or how would you explain just the idea of face?
Kissing ass and sucking up.
That's one way.
Well, yeah. I think it's also...
No, I mean, that's a very critical way of saying it. I appreciate what Jared's saying and the way that he's saying it. It's extremely high level, extremely rose-colored glasses, I think, way of looking at it, because there is a lot of shit involved with that. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of just kissing ass, putting up with a ton of crap, seeing people that are sitting above you that got there not by ability, but because they've got the right last name or the mm-hmm. right friend that they went to high school with, or they grew up in the same town or country side with, or something like this. I mean, there's a ton of that shit. So his approach, it's almost a little bit self-serving in a way, to like kind of appease the inner frustrations and anger in a way to actually be able to deal with it in certain situations. If you can step back and give it appreciation, like, well, they didn't get here by fucking chance. You know, it wasn't a lottery. Somebody actually had to choose it. Somebody had to make a decision. And that decision was based on something. Now that person got there because they knew what that something was ahead of time and then knew how to do that. And so it's kind of the Chinese game.
Yeah.
So drilling down on that a little bit more, Todd, I think that's some very good comments. And I think about it is also, it's very easy for sometimes coming to China for the first time to get really negative, get very frustrated about how things go work.
Yeah.
But what I've learned and I have seen is that having that negative attitude does not lead to success.
In China.
In China.
Or anywhere.
It doesn't. So coming in after the thing being, you know, angry or upset at that guy because he got this job because of his last name or all the unfairness, whether being upset and I think does not lead to effective outcomes. But being more patient and understanding and learning to work with people and help people maintain face, it can actually lead to much better outcomes and you can be much more successful in what you're trying
but
to accomplish.
But it's that setup. And I understand what you're saying, Dr. Phil, but what, you know, it's about, sure. If you want to play the game, you know, then you'll be successful. You have to get in line and wait your turn and behave and be a good boy. And, you know, then, you know, you'll kind of get your chance, but because it's very, and I always mess up this word, hierarchical.
Hierarchical.
See, hierarchical. Yeah. Hierarchical. Whatever it is.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, but it's very vertical and there's a lot of barriers and they keep all the information and they keep all the power. Yeah. And it's very, very separated. And it's very difficult to kind of go. And it's very un-Western as we know it to mm-hmm. just... you know, to just perform and show up on time and, you know, not cause a lot of issues in the office and some other things and show some leadership and some initiative and that you will then be the best person for the job. It's not about being the best person for the job, or it's not just about being the best person for the job, which I think it is in the West. Here, it's about you're the best person for the job and you show me a lot of face. You know, I know you're loyal to me and you're one of my little minions and I don't have to worry about you backstabbing me or other things and trying to steal my job. And so I will allow you to then take a small step forward in the company because they're as threatened by people below them as anybody.
Yeah. But is this completely relatable towards being an entrepreneur in China?
I think some aspects of this certainly are relatable to being an entrepreneur in China. What I've seen is that I think you can still be very effective here in China and still sort of playing that game. I'll give you a couple of examples. Is that working in this entrepreneurial environment with these Chinese investors is that a lot of this information is very siloed. People are doing their jobs. There's not a lot of cross information. People sometimes are guarded. But what I've come to learn is that most people do not like that system. They don't, they may not, they function it, they accept that's how it is, but they don't necessarily enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And so what I've done is I've been able to work across different departments, different, so getting, creating relationships and helping to bridge gaps, bridge, you know, connect people. And it's very effective. Also recognizing in China, there's a classic saying, is two rules about China, is that one, everything is possible. Two, nothing is easy.
Yeah.
And I've taken this through even with going, dealing with government departments when we were trying to incorporate like our business.
Yeah.
We had a big hang up on getting the license for the business license for our shop. Not health license, not these things. It was the business license. And it was because the landlord just didn't have all the documents clear. It was the first time the landlord did it. The place was sublet. It was been divided and it was a food business. Anyway, it was just a mess. And the lawyers actually dropped it. The lawyers I had, the lawyers I had who were going to incorporate, they said, look, this is just going to be a mess. We're not even going to mess with it. We don't even know how long it's going to take. We don't even think you're going to be able to do it. And so I had to do it by myself.
Wow.
And I had a couple of people help me just fill out forms occasionally, but it was me going down to the office. And I remember after the 10th time going down to the Gongshangju, the commerce department, and I was coming back on my electric bike, and I thought to myself, I'm not even mad. I'm not even upset. You know, and I just realized, I'm like, wow, I've come a long way here in China. But yeah. What I came to understand is that lady who I worked with, yeah. Yang Laoshi, she appreciated that I was trying, and she didn't like the system either. Yeah. And she knew it was frustrating, and she doesn't like all the paperwork, but that's her job. She's just doing her job. Mm-hmm. And one time, realizing that a lot of these people, they're just doing their job.
Yeah.
They're just trying to do their job. That goes a long way. And you understand that lady at the end of the day, she's got to go home and she's going to make dinner for her kids. And, and she's got her own life and she's doing something on the weekend. You know, she's just a person like you and me, and she's just doing her job. And I think that, and
to
also
a degree,
me,
China, to a degree, I mean, you're spinning this again, really, really kindly. But there's the other half out there that are, the maximum they're going to put in is the minimum that they need to.
Okay? I think I've definitely seen that. And I think what I've seen that's helped me is going to these offices as me, as the owner, the entrepreneur myself, speaking Chinese, trying, filling out forms, sometimes writing Chinese. It gets a lot of respect from people. That you're just trying.
No, you put in the effort with the language.
And also I told them, I say, hey, you know, can you help me? You know, I'm just this is what I'm trying to do, or is this going to work? What do you think? And asking for people's help, a lot of times it gives them face, actually, because when you ask for someone's face, it's kind of like it just says, oh, you're the expert. You know what you're doing. I don't. And so I can benefit from the wisdom that you're giving me. And so that's one way to give them face.
Yeah.
And I found that once you do that, it's across all sorts of government departments I've been in. I've done with the education department for my kids. I've done with the commerce department, the food department, the police station, the entry-exit bureau. It doesn't matter what it is. I've always had people willing to help because I try and I ask.
Yeah, I love that. It's very, it just in my head, it looks like the dude abides, like the Big Lebowski. You're just letting the Zen happen, accepting things as they are, and moving forward through that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point. And also accepting things as they are, but knowing that that's not how it has to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing, is that understanding this is how the system is, how it works, but you can get that system work for you. In China, we have the rule of man versus rule of law. Mm-hmm. So you can have one person, they can just say no, and they can cause all sorts of problems for you, but they can also say yes.
Yeah.
And so I think if you coming into China and looking at a lot of these issues, is that we worry about some of these risks and things, and that's true. But you also recognize if you can just get that person on your side, just get them to say yes, then all sorts of problems can go away and all things can just go a lot smoother.
I think that's a great segue into our break. And then when we come back, I want to ask you about how you deal with the local tax guy who probably comes by Cineswirl every so often and tries to shake you down. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. We want to give a shout out to our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in the East. They are a mentorship-driven program that takes your ideas from all over the world and helps you make them successful in China. At the same time, we take great ideas from inside China and help them grow all over the world. If you want to find out more, please visit www.chinaaccelerator.com, and batch 10 applications are going to be open soon, so it's a really good opportunity to get in there.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, People Squared. People Squared is the largest and best co-working space across China. They've got 8 or 9 spaces in Shanghai. They've got spaces up in Beijing. They've got spaces down in Shenzhen. They really are the best community of people to be dealing with here. So if you have a startup and you're coming to China, People Squared is your number one choice.
And we'd also like to thank our syndication partner, Technode. They are the number one source for news and information about the startup ecosystem, what's going on inside of China. They also work with TechCrunch and helped publish and syndicate that. So we're really happy to have them on as a syndication partner. You can find out more at technode.com. Hey guys, we're back with Jared Turner, and following up on Todd's question, how do you deal with the shakedowns having a brick and mortar store? Like, well, just like it's considered life, basically. How do you deal with life having a brick and mortar store in China?
I say that because I've got a lot of friends, as I think anybody who's been in China for a while, who's doing restaurants and F&B and other things, bars and such. And
I have one story specifically about that. I had the police guy come by. He's just the neighborhood guy. He says, he comes and checks in. Say, oh, hey, my name's so-and-so. Oh, this is kind of my beat. It's my area. And I said, all right, great. He comes in a few days later, and he's like, oh, you guys are missing an exit sign here. We had just opened up PS a couple months early. You're missing an exit sign here, and you know there's a fine for this of like 40,000 RMB, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to give you guys just a warning this time, but you got to go down to the police station and sort it out. And we're like, oh, I'm all worried. So I send one of my guys down there because I didn't think I could handle this in Chinese. So I send him down to the police station. And he goes up, and they take him up to this fourth floor. This room is, there's this big room. Everyone's sitting at nice desks. And he sits down with this lady, and she's in some nice stuffed chair, and he starts asking her all these, she starts asking him all these questions, saying like, hey, what's your business? How big is it? You know, the owner's a foreigner, you know, what's your revenues? They start asking, they try to size up how big we are, how big our company is. And he says, oh, we're new, you know, so she kind of realizes we're not that big. But I sent him down with a box of cinnamon rolls to kind of, you know, as a peace offering. And they liked them and passed them around the office. Evidently, the boss liked them. And she ended up saying, all right, you can go, but you need to bring cinnamon rolls here 3 times a week. And you need to bring like 2 to 3 boxes every time. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And he comes back telling me this. I'm like, what? I'm like, we're going to like shut down here. This ain't cool. And so I don't know what to do. The next day I called my landlord because our location, it's in the Donghai Guangchang. It's a state owned property.
Yeah.
And so I call my landlord, who has connections with the actual owners of this, who are, you know, actually the board, which is this bunch of, you know, state owned guys. But by the time I got to him, I didn't have enough time. And I said, well, all right, well, we took some cinnamon rolls down the next day as they requested. And but after, my landlord says, don't take them back. Don't go back. Don't take any more cinnamon rolls to them. And we're like, okay, all right. But then a week later, the same police officer, he comes by, but he doesn't come in the shop. He stays outside and he kind of motions to me and to like maybe my employee. And he comes out there and he says, he kind of was like not looking at me in the eye. He's kind of looking at me. He's like, just want to see if maybe he could buy a box of cinnamon rolls. Could you deliver it down to the station for me? And we're like, yeah, sure. Give us like, you know, a half hour and we'll bring it down. So, okay, yeah. Here's the number. And so I have my employee take it down and he goes down to the shop. He calls up the police officer, comes down. And my employee later on tells me, he says, he seemed really nervous. He kind of wasn't really looking at me. He kept saying it was like sorry for the misunderstanding. Sorry, you know, for that. It was just a misunderstanding. And then,
And
then we've never heard from again. And it turns out, I think what happens, our landlord talked to the Donghai Guangchang, board guys. They talked to the police station, came down and says, hey, don't mess with these guys. And so we haven't had to deal with it again. And actually, the police officer, I got his phone number. I called him up a couple of times when we had some issue, and he seems real nice.
Nice, yeah.
There was only the times we had the food department come by, but the lady did our licensing and everything. One good thing for me is that I have four kids, and I just show them a picture. Hey, here's my family. And they spent more time looking at pictures of my kids than they do looking at the shop. And the labor department comes by, and I'm just nice to them. Oh, what do you need? Yeah, let's fill this out. Sure. Do you have this? I'm like, I don't have it on me right now. And it's like, oh, okay, that's fine. So I think Winston is just kind of being nice to people, and
it's 100% true. I mean, God, it would have saved me a lot of hassle, because when I first was in China, I rebelled and got angry a lot. I just kept saying, this is bullshit. Like, this is not right. You're causing me undue, stress and harm. And I'm trying to get in my visa, and I've got to have a guy, give you a very expensive box of tea and in order for this document to go through, and all these kind of, like, this is just, and it would just, it rankled. And my Chinese friends and things that were helping me, they're like, hey man, just like, calm down, just listen. You're like, don't do anything. It's all be fine. Just play the game. And I just kept being told to play the game and, be nice and everything. And man, it worked. It always works if you're just super, super nice and just play the game. And
my friend, these guys that come by the shop, in fact, we don't get a lot. But so when they do come by, a lot of them, they're doing their job.
Yeah.
They're supposed to ground and do the annual checks. They're supposed to, labor hard. They're supposed to come by every 6 months, make sure everything's in line. And you just treat them like, hey, just doing their job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just fill it in.
That's
it's a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. And that's really insightful, because you can get it done here the right way. And the right way doesn't mean you have to compromise who you are, your morals, your values, your idea of what you want to get done. Like, I think a lot of people have, at least in my back home, for me and my friends, they have a conception that China is more backwards than it really is. They want to paint it in a sense that, you have to basically compromise your ideals to get a lot done. Like, oh yeah, it's supposed to be really, this way and backwards that way. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, you can go get your idea. You can build your empire and build it the way you want. It's just going to be different.
And it's hard, because when you see a lot of people be more successful faster because they did compromise.
But also, I think it's important to recognize this, is that we're talking mainly about Shanghai. When you're going to some little podunk town, if you're doing some business out there, things can be really different. It can be like the Wild West out there. The sheriff can rule the roost.
I came from 5 years of Dalian, which is tier two at best. And so things, back in 2009 were, a lot different back then.
What's the plan now for the future of you guys's business?
You're raising money, right?
Yeah. We have an investment we're raising right now. We're about halfway there. We're looking for a couple more investors.
How has that gone, trying to raise money for brick and mortar?
Yeah, it's gone all right. Yeah. I think more importantly is, it's been a process of us of kind of evolving and understanding how to go about raising money. It's the first time I've actually raised money for a venture like this.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a kind of a slow evolving process, and now I've got a much clearer picture about how we're going to go out and achieve this. I've had a lot of other great entrepreneurs who've been successful, who've kind of taken me under their wings and advised me, hey, this is how we did it. Here's maybe how you could think about it.
And was it good advice? I mean, was it game changing, or was it just somewhat helpful?
Both. I've had the range of those. Some of the things really changed, because we talk a lot about, entrepreneurs, about running lean, but sometimes you don't realize how lean you can run. And so you think, I'm still going to need this and this and that. But, some guys actually went through it and they said, we didn't actually need that. We were able to actually do it with just A, B, and C, and not all the way down to E, F, G.
And so true.
And so it was that aspect was really helpful for me, talking to other people who've gone through it.
Interesting. Okay. And then what are you going to do with the money?
We are planning on opening this year at least two more shops.
Yeah.
And the next year we'll probably open two to three more. At the same time, we'll be focusing on wholesale opportunities. We've had a lot of opportunities for wholesale, but it requires quite a bit of time and some money investment to get that going. And we need some
wholesale. What would that look like?
We've had discussions with like Starbucks.
White supplying. Label your...
There's a few different options. There's a range of options along that, but we've had a lot of other retailers who mentioned distributing our cinnamon rolls. So we have some big opportunities on the wholesale side. Mm-hmm. But I think what's great for us is I've talked to another guy. He has a candy company, and they have about 120 candy stores here around China. And he said, Jerry, he says, once you had... we didn't get any wholesale opportunities till we had about 30 stores. Hmm. Says you got one little store and you've got big wholesale opportunities. Well, wow. I think a great opportunity for us is that we're the only ones in China doing this.
Yeah.
We're out of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
About. Looking over at the guys. Yeah. So they're trying to cut us off. That sucks. I really enjoy these kinds of conversations. It's really interesting. I mean, with brick and mortar people, they just know so much more about, you know, the actual China, right? We're not kind of sitting on top doing internet stuff. I mean, yes, worrying about getting your ICP license and your WeChat, you know, registration for your service account. And there's some of these things, right? Which Jared's probably going through as well. But, you know, having to deal with so many more real, tangible facets of actually trying to do business in China is pretty crazy. And I mean, kudos to you, man, because... Yeah. You've been a cowboy all the way. I mean, you were married with kids and coming out to China and then had a couple more kids. Now you're up to four kids. and then thanks to your wife's amazing recipe and all the activity on the Shanghai Mama's blog or website, you know, this business opportunity, and you were wise enough to recognize what it was and then had the balls to jump in and do it.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. And still to be like the hella nice guy that you are. So, I mean, it's, it's amazing.
Thanks so much for being on the show with us.
Yeah, man.
Well, thanks guys. I really appreciate
that. So how do people get in touch with you if they want to learn more, get some more advice or
just eat a cinnamon roll?
Cinnabuns. Yeah.
Yeah, you can contact me. You can find us through, our website, cinnasworldchina.com. Mm-hmm. And so through there, actually, it's my wife's email that I kind of take care of it. So, it's the wife of the business. So you can contact us through there. And so if you ever just search Jared Turner Shanghai, you're always going to find me.
Excellent. And I want to give a shout out to Heather for making these amazing.
Thank destroying
you
so much.
I got to give it to Heather. She's an amazing woman, and none of this would have happened without her. And she's certainly the heart and soul of Cineswirl.
Yeah.
And thank you, Heather.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And it's nice that you guys are only like, you know, 30 meters from our front door.
Yeah.
So just kind of right there all the time.
30 meters away, and it's going to add 30 centimeters to your waist.
I know. Nice. Yeah, that's a tagline. Yeah. All right. Yeah, come on down to Yuyuan Donglu, right under the Soho Tower if you want to find the Cineswirl shop, our Shabahao, right? Yuyuan Donglu, somewhere in
that's
there.
Right.
And get yourself some sticky goodness.
All right.
So we hope that you enjoyed our sticky goodness of this podcast.
Wow. All right.
You know, thanks to Darren and Vivian and Ryan for laughing at my jokes.
Yeah.
And thanks again, Jared, for coming. And thanks to our listeners.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Ryan.
Bye-bye. Bye.